This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
All right, here we go on a Tuesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Everybody's having a good start to their Tuesday. We're going to get into some Royals baseball here in about 10 minutes or so. Something that Vern pointed out that puts things in even more perspective on where the Royals have started the 2025 season. That's coming up in 10 minutes or so. You guys can always hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. A little bit later on in the show as well, we'll talk about where running backs are valued in the NFL. Right? We mentioned yesterday with the Chiefs draft, but is there a possibility that it could lead to something else happening before the start of this season? We'll get into that coming up at 11 o'clock. But is that new, by the way? You got a video stream.
This is the Ruse one I got on Sunday.
That's the Ruse pullover or windbreaker. So that's kind of nice. Okay, I like that.
Let's go Royals, you know? It's got the Ruse colors. I got to support UMKC when I got the chance. I only have one class left this semester. We don't take a final in my class. We turn in a final podcast.
Because you didn't want to have to grade it? Is that what happened?
I have to grade it either way. Oh. We turn in a final podcast. It just seems silly. Like, I could either make them turn it in a week later and we could all show up for a day of the finals, or you could turn it in now.
Yeah.
As in next week and we can be done with this thing. I think that everybody agrees that that's probably, wouldn't you prefer that if you were in the class?
Yes. Yeah, I would agree with that.
So either way, I got to grade it. You guys want to grade some? I'll give you like 5.
No.
I read something the other day. Do you ever like read something occasionally? This is really small, but you ever read something occasionally and then it like kind of quickly influences your action because you're like, well, I don't want to be that person.
For sure.
I read there was like a long-term study the other day. And as somebody with the last name T, this is important.
Last name starts
with a T.
Gotcha.
There is a long-term study proving that there is a bias in grading related to what letter your last name starts with. As in, you are historically less likely to get a good grade on something because people typically grade alphabetically, and by the time they get to
tired,
T, they're sick
out.
Of it.
They're just like, whatever.
They're tired of it.
So you don't want to be an A.
So I'm mixing it up. I'm grading all over the place. Random draw in my class for the podcast because I don't want to, you know. I guess once I get to podcast 8, you're in trouble, but like, I don't know what to tell you. But at least it won't
You said you're grading reverse?
I'm not reverse. It's random.
Okay.
I'm going all over the alphabet. No preferential treatment. Isn't that stupid?
How many, at this point, how many classes have you canceled? It feels like you don't teach. It feels like you've canceled 3, 4, 5 of them.
No. We only canceled, this semester we canceled 2.
Oh.
It's not bad, but 2 overall.
That's not bad, yeah.
There was one that I let the kids get out early one time, but that was it. It's 2.5.
2.5. 2.5.
If you want to round up, 2.5, but
okay.
2 total. Not bad.
Still waiting for a student to come in studio at some point and give us a real assessment on your teaching abilities and what their initial impressions were of you and everything. We need that in studio on a fan club Friday maybe at some point in time, assuming the student's 21. If not, it won't be a fan club Friday. It'll just be a random visit if that's the case. But anyway, let's talk some Chiefs football and where the expectations are at for this offense heading into what eventually will be the offseason program, right? Rookie minicamp will be here before we know it. OTAs, and then believe it or not, in a couple months we'll be up in St. Joe for training camp. The offensive expectations, I think the Chiefs have put themselves, even though they didn't go and draft heavy on offense like some people would have liked, they've put themselves in a corner where I think the expectation should be very high offensively because they've said that the offense would have been, I don't want to use the word elite, but would have been one of the top offenses if everybody was healthy. They've told us that's their plan.
Multiple times.
So that's, ask me my expectation for the offense. It's that they're a top 8 offense in football, if not better.
I honestly think that I'm going to base my expectation on their actual plan. And their plan in a lot of ways was not that of a team that felt like they needed to fix their offense, but instead was a team that said, hey, man, if things had just gone the way they were supposed to go, we were an elite offense. We just got unlucky. We just got, you know, like, what a terrible stretch. Now, I will say, I'm still dinging them for the line. Until I know what left tackle and left guard look like, there's a limitation for what level your offense is capable of being until I know what level your offensive line is at. Sure, I trust the wide receivers, Worthy and Rice, coupled with Travis Kelce and everyone else in Hollywood Brown. That's a plan that works. I'm cool there. It makes sense to me that that would be a plan that works. Running back, I still think you're mediocre. An offensive line, I don't know. My expectation is you better for sure be a top 10 offense. My expectation is fringe five. I don't think that there's anything they've done on paper this year other than just get healthy that constitutes this is the league's best offense. We thought that going into last year, but now we know more things about the offensive line and still have unknowns, and we know more things about the running back. We know exactly who they have in Kareem Hunt, Isaiah Pacheco, and Carson Steele. So unless Rashard Smith is like a game breaker in the seventh round, which again is pretty uncommon, I like fringe top five is about what I'm willing to say on the offense right now.
Oh, I'd be thrilled with that. I think everybody, I mean, if you're a top five offense in football, nobody should be complaining if that's actually what they get to. And I do buy in. Now there's the injury risk, but if they actually are able to have Worthy, Rice, in that group, along with Hollywood Brown, on the field at the same time for 80%+ of the season, which we haven't seen, I do think it actually suddenly is one of the better wide receiver rooms in the league. I really believe that. But you're banking on them being available. And that's the Chiefs, I think, have been pretty open with essentially saying that without saying it out loud. Their actions have told us. They're saying that our 1-2-3 receivers plus Kelce, that's still as good as anybody in football. That's what they're with the best quarterback in football. And that's going to put him in that spot.
What does it look like though? If they're fringe top five, like I'm not saying give like statistics or whatever, like your expectations there, but like, what does it look like? Are they stretching the field a little bit more?
For them
are
to
they
be,
pushing it down? Like, what are your expectations in that regard? Or does that fit into that?
I think the only way I can envision them being a top five offense or right around there, I think it means the deep plays, the explosive plays have to be back in the offense. I just don't know how else it's going to happen. If all of a sudden Worthy, I guess, you know, would be the prime example, right, of the deep ball, but there could be other, heck, even the rookie, I think, has an opportunity to help them in that area at times. If that's the case, that's how they're top five. If you're telling me that they're still bottom 10 in explosive plays or you know, half middle of the league in explosive plays, I don't know how they would be top five offense.
Because you and I said the same thing going into the draft, that's the plan. And I don't hate the plan. There's nothing inherently flawed about it because that was your plan last year, right? If you go into the year last year and you say, we're a top five offense, we put it all on paper, then you never got to see it. There's no evidence for the Chiefs to go into this year and not think that plan will work again. Except a couple little things I would point out that I think are fair. Jalen Moore is a big unknown. I think he'll be a good left tackle, but he is an unknown. I don't think it's unfair to say that.
Yeah.
They're just things we don't know about it. Hollywood Brown hasn't stayed healthy in 3 years. Travis Kelce is 35 years old. Rashee Rice is coming off a major injury. So like there are like, when you start stacking them, you're like, you're counting on a lot of things going well in that department, as in Jalen Moore is at least a league average tackle, Rashee Rice shows no signs post-injury, and that Travis Kelce doesn't show any more signs of aging, and that Hollywood Brown stays healthy for the first time in a couple of years. So like, and his injury last year was freakish, but like overall, he's had a difficult time staying healthy, so there's still reason to believe that that would be a problem. And so, you know, just as long as those things kind of lie into place, you work out there. And now, at least, I think they got a backup plan if Hollywood Brown couldn't stay healthy, and that people think very highly of Jalen Royals, whether it be Dane Brugler, who said he had him as his 65th overall rated player and like his number four wide receiver. I saw Trevor Sikkema, who we've had on this show, say he's the most underrated wide receiver in this year's NFL draft. You got a little bit more of a safety net than you did last year, which was just, sure hope Sky Moore's better now.
Well, yeah, they brought in Juju. They traded for DeAndre Hopkins in that spot. And injuries are going to happen. Somebody's going to get hurt on the offense. You just hope it isn't a prolonged injury. You hope it's not one of your most explosive playmakers.
Yeah.
If an injury is going
and
to short occur.
Short term, not long term.
The great news is, while it ended up biting them in the rear in the Super Bowl and everything, if the defense can continue to play at a high level, we're asking what's our expectation for the offense. Do I think the offense has to be top five for them to be a number one seed and go to the Super Bowl? No. But we're just talking offense right here. Because I saw somebody text and said, hey, even with how bad the offense was, they've still won 15 games last year. 100% they did. We're just talking specific to the offense. If you believe and want them to be a top five offense or a French top five, what does that look like? And should that be the expectation? But yeah, they could be the 10th best offense. And of course, they could still go to the Super Bowl. It'd be foolish to say they couldn't.
Yeah. I mean, they did last year. Exactly. With not even a top 10 offense. It was like 13th or something by the time the season ended. But if you're not going to invest in the free agency, in the running back or wide receiver, really, other than Hollywood Brown, which is the same plan you had last year, and you're not going to do some big swing in the draft, well, then I have to assume, because you have Patrick Mahomes, you have Andy Reid, you have all the pieces of, you have all the makings of an elite level offense. Do you thought you were going to be a top five offense last year with these pieces put together? And look, Worthy should actually give you more confidence, because last year, Worthy was the unknown. You had Rice and Hollywood Brown and Travis Kelce, but you didn't know if Worthy was going to be an instant contributor to your offense. You now know he can be and is a guy who matters to your offense. So like, you've even got a little more information. I honestly think anything outside the top 10 is a disappointment again. I would have said the same thing last year, and it was. Anything outside the top 10 is a disappointing year for the offense. I think anything outside the top 5 is a little disappointing. I wouldn't call it a failure by any means. And obviously, I would adjust that goal based on if they lost some major member of their offense like they did last year. But man, they have got to be more explosive. Might just be even more than the points per game ranking. Can you not be the league's worst offense in average depth of target? Can you not throw the ball half a yard every single pass attempt and instead push the ball down the field a little? That's what you and I are asking for, probably more than even just the total number of points they score this year, you know?
Coming up in 10 minutes, we'll play some audio of a general manager in the NFL calling into a radio show, and it was great, by the way.
Oh, it was
really
good.
Really, really good. It happens to be an AFC rival as well, so we'll get to that in a bit. But briefly, let's talk some Royals baseball. Josh Vernier, his on-deck show gets going again tonight. As the Royals were off yesterday, they're back at it tonight in Tampa, taking on the Rays. And as you said yesterday, it'll be kind of a unique game because they're playing at a spring training facility again due to the Tropicana Field roof being gone due to the hurricane, unfortunately, a year ago.
Kind of curious what it looks like on TV. Yeah. I haven't watched anybody watch any Rays games this year?
No.
Not
a single Rays game. Oh. But Vern, you guys see on our social media, we all do these videos on our Instagram account for 96.5 The Fan, and we give a Chiefs take, or yesterday was a Royals take. And Vern's Royals take, I think, put the start of the season, considering the offensive struggles, in perspective that it's been so bad offensively, but you know, you should feel better about how good this team is based off of how some of the other teams that are struggling offensively and where they're at record wise. Like some of these teams that are struggling offensively, like the Royals, they are a way different spot in the standings and of course in their overall record.
There are only two teams that are even comparable to what the Royals are doing from the negative end offensively so far this year. Right, we know they've been one of the league's worst offenses. There's no hiding behind that. That's absolutely the truth. The two teams that most closely resemble the Royals offensively, and the only ones that rank either worse or pretty much the same as the Royals, are the Chicago White Sox, who are currently 7-21, 14 full games under 500. Pretty bad, just so you know. One of the worst teams in the league. And a team that we've mentioned before, because they just faced them, the Colorado Rockies, who are 4-24, a massive, and after last night's loss, 20 games under 500, which is somehow worse than the White Sox a couple of years ago, when they set like a record for the number of losses they had in the season. So they're the two worst teams in the league. Like those are, and not even kidding, I looked through just to make sure, the two worst records in all of baseball. Those are the only two teams who are doing what the Royals are doing offensively. So it'd be easy. I understand to be like, well, that can't be good for the Royals. And what I'm telling you is, this is the biggest sign that the Royals are a good baseball team. You're like, but how? Because if you were a bad baseball team, this would have already sunk your ass. You would have been down and out. You'd have already been buried. For it to have an offense this bad, if you weren't a good baseball team, which is what I'm telling you the Royals are based on this stat, it would have buried you already. Because it buried two teams in baseball pretty sick. And not just buried them. Like, They're dead and gone. Those two teams are already probably looking at trades for the next month or two.
And I get it. We all knew the Rockies aren't any good before the season. We all knew the White Sox were still going to be a bad team. So I understand that the comparison was never going to be those teams. But this early, when you're looking at the offense, it tells you why they're so much different than those teams. Mm-hmm. And the pitching is the key to this whole thing, of course. That's why. But they've also been able to kind of just grind through it. When things haven't been going well, you can look at the losing streak that they had, and immediately they bounce back with a winning streak that they really desperately needed to have. And it's why you kind of have a reset. You're one game under 500, and you're right there in the Central. Nobody's running away with the AL Central, despite how well the Tigers have played at times. You're not in the division in the NL East where the Mets are like, 17 and something, like where they're way out in front in terms of major league wins. The Tigers have had a very nice start to the year, but they're not going to run. Do anybody think that the Tigers are going to run away and win this division by 9 games or something like that? I don't think anybody does. So you stay around 500 until you get this offense figured out. And even if the offense takes longer, they have shown through pitching, I think they can at least hover around and hang through this for a bit. That's what they showed me in the last 10, 15 days.
Like the Texans saying, hey, they're not necessarily a good team. They have good pitching. But I'm just telling you, I'm sure the White Sox and the Rockies have terrible pitching. That's why they're just buried overall. But being able to overcome that start offensively says something about the quality of team you are. I just think it does. And I think that it would have ruined previous Royals teams who either had a good offense or a good defense, or ruined other teams in baseball. Like the Twins are another example of this. The Twins have also won 6 of 7, by the way, and are now only a game back of the Royals as the AL Central continues to once again tighten up. Tigers lost last night. The Royals are in third place, are only 4 games back. The Twins are only 5 games back. The Guardians are 2.5 games back. It's a wash. Once again, the Tigers will probably go through their cold streak just the same as anyone else, and we'll probably be down to the final month of the season when we decide who wins this division. I think it says something about you as a team. I think it says something about you as a team that you can overcome a massive deficiency and still be a team that is competitive and wins baseball games. And I'm not saying they're winning all the time. They're not like 18-11 like the Tigers, but this is a good baseball team.
913-586-7965. Someone says, you guys always say you can't make the playoffs in April, but you can miss the playoffs in April. Regardless of what happens the rest of the month, they didn't put themselves in any spot to miss the playoffs in April. Yeah, that's exactly right. This thing could have gone really south. Could have gone really, really south. They stabilize. They're going to enter the month of May, hopefully with a chance to be above 500. Yeah. They got an opportunity to do that before this weekend, obviously. So yeah, that's where we're at. Nobody's saying that 500 is going to get them the playoffs, but right now I'll take 500 baseball. Considering 500
almost got them in the playoffs last year. Yeah. They won 86 games.
Yeah.
They weren't like dramatically above it. From the 417, overcoming bad starts points to good leadership. I think that this is part of what I mean when they're a good team. I think the leadership from Bobby Wood Jr. and Vinny Pasquantino and Cutrero, who didn't let this thing come out of hand, or the starting pitching staff. Have they announced, by the way, is Reagan's available to pitch tomorrow? Have they still just not said? He had the hamstring injury. They've said nothing about it. He's technically slated to pitch, I think, tomorrow for the Royals.
So Lorenzen is tonight.
Yeah, so it should be Reagan's tomorrow. They haven't said anything yet.
Just as far as like on the website for the Royals, Royals.com for Wednesday, it lists
TBD.
TBD still.
Yeah, so, I haven't said yet. Okay, we'll get back to Reagan's. Maybe that'll be tomorrow's conversation. Hmm. But that's like the leadership part of this is important. Like, and to the 816 point, good pitching beats good hitting every time. It does. It absolutely does. She's still going to hit. Like, the Royals are not going to be able to have five guys in their lineup hitting sub 200 with a sub 250 on base percentage. That won't work forever. Eventually, they'll have to go digging into the minor leagues and looking for guys if that continues to kind of be the trend. By the way, an update for those who want to come down, I want to remind you, you can come down on our Cody and Gold road trip. We're heading down to watch Cags play some baseball. They did a call up yesterday, I noticed.
They did.
In AA for Peyton Wilson, who was more than deserving of it. He was hitting like 400. He's having a tremendous year for the Naturals. He'll now go play for the Omaha Storm Chasers. They typically, just as a little insider info, typically do those promotions on the off day, as in on the Monday before they travel on Tuesday. They call up Peyton Wilson. We're going down to watch Cags Saturday, May 3rd, 6:05 first pitch. If you pre-order the shirt, we're meeting at Harbell's from 3:30 to 5 to hand those out. We have a few extras in case you didn't get your tickets in time. I don't know how many yet, but we got a few extras for those who still come down to Harbell's. Gold and I are going to go out to a bar after as well. But importantly, 96.5thefan.com. You can buy a $10 ticket to the game. We now have 190 people going on this trip. So, I don't know, 2 to 50. however many are heading down there. We got 190 people already going down to see CAGS. We're all sitting in a similar section. You'll see those tickets at 96.5thefan.com. Really looking forward to it. If you want to come on the trip, come join us. It'll be a good time.
Yeah, $10 tickets. That's all it is. The weather looks really good for Saturday as well. And for those of you that were holding off to make sure, you know, would CAGS be there? Here we are. It's Tuesday, and he's still with the Double A team.
Weather's so, looking good.
We're in good shape for that. Hope to see you guys out there. And yeah, I would say the number of listeners at this point, I mean, no number will surprise me anymore. I honestly think you're right. 250 is in play, maybe even more than that, depending on how this thing goes. So
I don't know. We're hoping for some last minute people to come join us.
We've got three sections behind the Naturals dugout. So CAGS, he'll know we're there. He'll know we're there.
It will be readily apparent seeing how there'll be like 200 of us wearing CAG shirts sitting in the stands together.
Yeah, and our Cody and Gold road trip is presented by the Art of Sports. We want to thank them for jumping on board with this road trip that we're going to do as well. If you guys are into sports cards, collectibles, they have some really cool memorabilia
maybe
there
CAGS
as well.
First Bowman.
Maybe
you, probably
maybe
get
you
at
want
the
some
shop.
CAGS. They certainly have a great selection of Bobby Witt cards. I can promise you that. In Town Center Plaza, right there in Leawood, the Art of Sports, they're a sponsor of our Cody and Gold road trip. So we appreciate them jumping on this with us as well. All right, let's go to Buffalo for a second because their general manager, Brandon Bean, called in, I believe, to our sister station, WGR 550, our friends up there. I don't think it was Mike Shope. Who we've had on the show, but it was WGR 550. And he heard them as he was waiting on hold talking about their draft. And I guess the hosts were maybe critical of the fact they didn't go heavy on wide receiver or something like that. Listen to this.
No, it was. It was. I was just listening to the last few minutes of your show before I came on, waiting on here.
All right.
Sounds like 2018 all over with you guys.
Well, we're very. How so?
Well, you guys were bitching in 2018 about Josh Allen, you guys wanted Josh Rosen, and now you guys are bitching that we don't have a receiver. I don't get it. Like, we just scored. Hold on, let me talk. Scored 30 points in a row for 8 straight games. A year ago, I get you guys asking why we didn't have receivers, but I don't understand it now. You just saw us lead the league in points when you add all the postseason. No one scored more points than the Buffalo Bills, including the Super Bowl champions. So, you just saw us do it without Stephon Diggs, same group. How is this group not better than last year's group? Like, I don't – like, our job is to score points and win games. Where do we need to get better? Defense. We did that. So I get it. You got to have a show, and you got to have something to bitch about. But bitching about wide receiver is one of the dumbest arguments I've heard.
So I love that. That's Brandon Bean, the GM. I appreciate the honesty. How often do you ever see, other than Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, pretty rarely will you ever hear a general manager, front office member publicly on the record on a radio
triggered.
Show. Just, yeah, he clearly
yeah.
was. Yeah.
I like it.
But I appreciate it. Now, I actually think he has a decent point too with what he was arguing. But that,
so we're the number one offense in the league. I'm sorry. Do you want us to score more points than that?
I love that.
Drew, you sounded like you were anti the scoring more points thing yesterday, but also Cincinnati's plan is we scored a lot of points last year. What if we just scored more?
Oh,
Brandon Bean's point makes sense.
Yeah. It makes sense. The thing that's interesting about it is, would you say it was defense that in the end, I guess, lost them the game? I mean, they gave up 32 points in the conference title game, but it wasn't like they were, you know, gangbusters on offense in terms of what they did passing wise. I mean, Josh Allen threw for 227 yards. The leading receiver was Mac Hollins. Like, I think there's levels to this where you shouldn't complain about the offense and everything like that. I get that they put up the points and all that other stuff, but if you have an opportunity to go and get somebody else who can be a number one wide receiver for you, maybe they don't see that in the draft. Fine.
But the problem is
I don't know if complaining about it's right, but I also don't think not bringing it up and saying there was no need to draft a wide receiver at all because look at how many points he scored. I don't think that's necessarily correct either.
I mean, I just think his point is valid as in they spent an entire year talking about it, and I didn't think they had enough weapons offensively. They were one of the top two offenses in the NFL last year. So, like, whoever they had a wide receiver was not the problem offensively. Mm-hmm. And like to his point, by the way, the most dehumanizing part of that is when the guy tries to finish, like, let me finish my thought. Just, you know, step aside. Okay. Shut up for a minute. That was, might as well be said. Shut up for a second. I'm talking.
I think you can argue though, that it was
so
that
funny.
Part of the, like them being unlocked as a definitive, like team that is the toughest team to beat. Josh Allen was 14th in the league last year in passing yards. It's not like he was throwing the ball all over the, Lamar Jackson should have won the MVP if we're being totally honest. I think we all agree with that.
Correct.
Josh Allen did win it, right?
Yeah, he is the MVP.
Josh Allen had the 14th most passing yards in the league. It's not like he was top five. He wasn't even top 10. He was barely top 15 in passing yards. So I think there is some validity to we need other people to throw the ball to other than really James Cook. Because their offense was James Cook and Josh Allen last year. Even Khalil Shakir, he was fine.
But the offense scored points. I mean, it has scored points every year.
I know, but again, if they had limitations last year on offense, if they have another wide receiver who's maybe a little bit better, then maybe they go into that game against the Chiefs and they end up winning the game. Like, if you look at the last two games that Josh Allen had in the playoffs, he threw for 127 yards against the Ravens, and he threw for 227 against the Chiefs. That's not going to get it done in the playoffs.
I mean, it got it done against the Ravens, for what it's worth. Like, I get your point, but, like, it did technically get it done against one of those teams.
I think also people are asking, like, did Brandon Bean just call it? He was scheduled to be a guest on the show. He was on hold, and he heard them. No, he did not just, like, randomly call in. That would be wild. No, he wasn't driving around and said, you know what? Screw this. Pick up the phone and call.
My
understanding is he was just scheduled for an interview. He was waiting on hold, heard them talk about the wide receivers, and then that's what happened.
Well, and mind you, the Ravens turned the ball over three. The Ravens lost that game because they turned the ball over three times, and the Bills didn't. I think, again, they won the game and they got to the AFC title game, but I don't think we can sit here and say, yeah, I love the wide receiver room of Khalil Shakir, Keon Coleman, and Mac Hollins. It looks great. I get why there would be some pushback, but to Brandon Bean's point, we did score a lot of points in that game, but it's not because they had a great passing offense. It's because they had James Cook, who now wants to get paid $20 million.
But that's not like, you know, the point is not where the offense comes from. It's that you have offense, and that's what they're better doing. And I would like, the text line's like, I don't know, like the level of professionalism. I wouldn't care if Brett Veach called him right now. If he's been listening to Alex and I complain about the fact
that
our biggest complaint is that they didn't get a running back in the earlier rounds and we wanted him to have a high upside guy to go with it. If Brett Veach wanted to call in right now and be like, you two are idiots, and let me tell you why you're idiots and what, fine, cool, I don't care.
More than happy for that to happen and have that conversation.
Numbers 913-586-7965, Brett, go nuts. But like, I like that Bean did this. He's standing on ground that this is their plan.
All right, coming up next, though, let's talk a little baseball and one thing that maybe needs to stop happening at one position for the Royals. And we'll take a look at the landing spots for quarterbacks that got drafted over the weekend. That's coming up right here on Cody and Gold. All right, just getting started here on a Tuesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Video stream up and running. You can watch the show. Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, X, which is also Twitter. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any portion of the show, or Fesco and Dusty, or The Drive.
Dusty, you've been coming down on the road trip with us.
Yeah.
In case you wanted to meet a member of the morning show.
It's going to be a ton of
fun. Dusty's a big CAGS guy, so he wanted to come along on the road trip as well. We're always happy to have more people come. It feels kind of Cody and Gold road trip with special guest Dusty Likens.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And someone asked, does CAGS know we're going on the road trip? He does. Mm-hmm. He does. He doesn't know how many people are showing up. He knows we are doing a road trip with listeners to watch him play baseball. That is confirmed.
He didn't say, like, I'll do shots with you guys in the bar after.
I don't think you should expect that. No.
That'd be crazy.
Yeah, I don't think he has a baseball game the next day.
I bet no minor league baseball players
on the road?
I'm not sure.
In Springfield.
About.
It's not even at home.
I don't know, man. Have you hung out with minor league baseball players?
No. Have you?
They don't mind a cocktail. Okay. I'm just saying, like, it's a non-zero.
Cody's trying to flex on us a little bit.
It's a non-zero.
What minor league players did you go and have drinks with in Omaha or Arkansas? I'm curious.
I'm not supposed to put people on this.
Member of the team?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm not a current member of the team.
Then it doesn't matter.
I think you could disclose it then, yes.
No, but you know how this works. It's like, some things are supposed to just be between people. That's all. All I'm telling
Very
you.
Very vague, Drew, don't you think?
I'm not supposed to tell you.
This is what's going on.
Somebody
here says
816, 165 listeners. No, man, we're up to 190 people going on this road trip right now. If you want to join, go to 965thefan.com. We're going to have a great time out there.
All right, let's talk about the big league club, though. We already mentioned just where the offense is at compared to other teams that are struggling and why you should feel better, actually, about the situation they're in. The experiment, though, that we discussed throughout spring training was how many different players are going to work in the outfield, right? India is going to get reps, and Michael Massey is going to get reps, but Mikel Garcia is going to get reps in center field. All of that has happened. Now that we're about to be a month, we're basically a month into the season. That's where we're at. It's April 29th. Opening day was in March. It's a month in. Can they still do that? Or is now where you need to start kind of consolidating that to a certain extent, especially with Drew Waters playing decent baseball in left field?
Okay. It's we had asked before, like, what are the next moves you need to do? I am at like 90% done with the Jonathan India experience in left field. This isn't even meant to be a knock. He's not a natural left fielder. He was learning a new position. He looks comfortable and fine at third. I just don't think that he's the level of defensive player that's making the transition well. And here's the other part of it. If Michael Massey's not going to hit, the plan should be right now, India at third base. It should be Michael Garcia at second or vice versa. India at second, Michael Garcia at third, and then they should put Drew Waters out in left field. I'm done with the Indian left field stuff. You guys been watching it? It's not pretty. And right now, if you're a team that's winning in the margins, which they are because of the offense,
sure.
Well, then let's shore up a little things defensively while we wait to hit. Also, I might improve the offense just based on the players I just mentioned because Massey's off to such a cold start to the season. It's just not working. It's not working for him in left field, and they're devaluing their defense to a point, especially because Renfroe in the other corner outfield's not playing gangbusters.
I don't know what it is.
It's not a weapon anymore. He's not getting to the ball. His arm doesn't look the same. So, like, and then at other times, they're weakening center field by putting Michael out there, which is not a bad thing, but Michael at third, sure. Indy at second, Waters in left, Isbell in center. I mean, that's a defense that actually functions.
If Drew Waters keeps playing like this, then of course, okay, that fixes this problem for the time being. But let's say that doesn't keep up and Drew Waters is not as effective. People are asking on the text line too, and it's fair. He just got called up to AAA, so let's be patient. But could Peyton Willis eventually be an option at corner outfield?
Wilson's playing a little bit, play second mostly, but he could play outfield.
But yeah. Maybe he's the Mike. You know, if Michael Massey continues to struggle, is he the actual option that they could use? Let's say it's a month from now.
I would guess that it's John Rave or something first, right? Because what we're talking about is a guy like India's the move for Massey doesn't have to be a move for second base like Peyton Wilson plays. The move for Massey can be an outfield position, and then Jonathan India can go back to playing second base. Michael Garcia can play more third base because he's cooled off a little bit, but still overall, Michael Garcia has been one of your better, more consistent offensive players across the board. So like, no, you don't have to do that. That's the whole point, is that right now the Jonathan India thing made sense when it was like, I want all these bats in. I want Garcia and India and Massey. I want all these guys in at the same time. It made sense now because multiple of those guys aren't hitting and Jonathan India is just going out there playing mediocre. I'll be below mediocre. I'm being a little too kind. Playing some bad left field. There's no point in like running through those risks every night. So like, I don't know if it'd be Peyton Wilson. I like Peyton Wilson. I told you before. I thought he deserved.
I don't think he's the next name up. I still think if there's another move that happens, let's say within the next 2 weeks,
it'll be Rave.
It's John Rave. That's probably the answer at that point.
Well, but if or we're Nick Lofton just stays up permanently instead of the current bereavement stuff he's doing for Tolbert.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a move that they would immediately just put Tolbert right back up with the big league club. Tolbert's been effective in what they've asked him to do. I just still wonder with the offensive struggles, is he valuable enough to only possess really one asset to you on the base pass? Like the bat's not what you're having Tolbert up there with. Can you do that and hold a roster spot?
With 26 man rosters, I think you can. Like in the old 25 man system, I don't really think you could, but I don't know, man. When you factor in like the idea that he's nearly perfect at doing it, it's kind of hard to make the argument that there's not a justification for it. Like I'm not saying it's easy, and especially when the Royals aren't hitting regularly right now, that's kind of tougher. You might be able to want to rotate some more guys out across the board. But this isn't even about like, and at some point they'll have to make a decision on cutting. I think they'd cut Renfroe before they sent Massey down, but the same reason they sent MJ down is like you have options, therefore you don't have to just cut a guy. You can continue to, bide your time if you want. On there are options. I mean, I get it. There are options, but just, I don't want Indy in left field anymore. He needs to be in an infield spot. And if that means Massey gets less playing time, that's Massey's current problem because he's not hitting well enough in order to justify, 6 days a week. Maybe he needs to be 4 days a week. Maybe five, whatever. There might need to be an adjustment on there based on where they are right now. Rave, by the way, has come down a little bit now in 22 games, only hitting .226 with a .313 average. So probably not even him. Nick Lofton has been their best hitter. He's got a .485 on base percentage.
Yeah, he's walking like crazy in AAA.
Crazy.
Coming up in 20 minutes, we'll talk some Chiefs football, particularly the running back position. Yesterday, we discussed just where they drafted a running back, but could this be a sign of what's happening in the league that could lead to some other moves? I mean, that could happen during training camp. We'll kind of explain what we're thinking there coming up in 20 minutes. But we know all the quarterbacks that got drafted. Of course, the story of Shedeur Sanders dropping in the draft and everything like that. But now let's take a look at where some of these QBs landed. Who do you actually think could start the soonest outside of Cam Ward? He's the obvious one. He's clearly going to start week one, no matter what the Titans might say. Oh, he's going to bat. He's going to start week one. I can promise you.
Why even healthy. Waste their, I don't even know why they waste their time. I hate when teams do that.
They play the game. We all know Cam Ward. If he's healthy, he'll start week one. He's he's 1-1. He was the number one overall pick. So let's take Cam Ward out of this. Who starts the soonest? We can get into who you think has the best fit, but who do you think starts the soonest outside of Cam Ward? Of course, Jaxson Dart was the second quarterback taken. He went to the Giants.
They're starting
Tyler Shuck there in New Orleans. Milroe in Seattle. Gabriel Cleveland. Will Howard, Pittsburgh. Riley Leonard there with the Colts. I think the answer to who will start the soonest outside of Cam Ward is actually Tyler Shuck.
They're trying to lose. It's obvious. I think.
Well, I just think Derek Carr's hurt. Spencer Rattler, didn't show much. Yeah, the QB room just stinks. Whereas, you know, Jalen Milroe's not starting over Sam Darnold week one, unless Sam Darnold is
especially
hurt.
Especially because they paid him paid him $100 million.
I don't even think Jalen Milroe sees the field this year.
I think
it's more likely
probably for him.
Yeah, but not the starting quarterback. Yeah, maybe he finds his way on the field, but like he's not the starting quarterback at any point this year.
Fair.
Shuck will start games for the Saints. Cam Ward will start games for the Titans. He'll start all the games, presuming health. Sanders will start games for the Browns, in my opinion.
Do you think Dan Gabriel starts one game?
No.
I don't either.
I just think Sanders is the better player. And by the time they force them to sit in a camp against each other, they will quickly decide that Sanders is the more talented player. I had someone last night be like, the whole long-term plan is they think Deion's going to take the Browns job. And I'm like, man.
That's all.
I mean, like the Browns probably do like drama. They brought in Deontay Johnson yesterday. Yeah. They want the messiest conceivable locker room on the planet. Bring in everybody, you know? Let's just see what
Will
happens.
Will Howard, the K-State product, of course, drafted late by the Steelers.
For him
to start, a couple things would have to happen. They're not like completely impossible. One, Aaron Rodgers retires. Two, they can't pull off a Kirk Cousins trade. We're going to talk more about that later on in the show. And then three, Mason Rudolph plays terrible for the first 5 weeks. None of them are like crazy. I just don't imagine them losing out on Rodgers and then still not being able to land Kirk Cousins, though. That's the problem.
This might be a bold take. One, because the room, but also the potential to get Aaron Rodgers or Kirk Cousins. I wouldn't be surprised if Will Howard started week one. I think he's better than Mason Rudolph.
If they don't get either of those guys.
But you would agree, though, they would have to whiff on Rodgers and Cousins.
Correct. Okay. I think that that's where it becomes a little bit bold, is I think that they would whiff right now. As of right now, obviously they're not in the room, but I don't think they're going to get Aaron Rodgers. I think Will Howard might end up being the guy.
Better.
Especially if they don't get Rodgers or Cousins, and it's down to Mason Rudolph or Will Howard. I think the Steelers should just play Will Howard.
I do too. There's no reason. Like, you might as well find out.
If all
Will
that
Howard,
failed,
I mean, he was taken in a spot where you might as well find out. I'd love that for the former K-State product and now national champion. How many rookie quarterbacks started last year? Dayton Daniels, Bryce Young, both Caleb Williams. Oh, no, those are two. Bryce Young's 2 years ago.
Yes.
So, Jaden Daniels.
And Caleb Williams.
Caleb Williams.
Drake May.
Drake May started. Bo Nix.
J.J. McCarthy did not. So, there's four.
So, four? Is that it?
I guess Spencer Rattler was
he got in a game, didn't he?
He started late, because Derek Carr got hurt.
So Spencer Rattler, that's part of the conversation we're having.
It counts. Well, which is why. By the way,
did Joe Milton start a game? Did he start a game for Dallas when they were going through all their injury stuff?
He started for the Patriots last year, the very last game of the year, because the Bills wanted to lose. And
that's right.
Joe Milton actually looked pretty good in that game.
Joe Milton, for what it's worth, we got to count him. He started a game for an NFL team.
Yeah,
I think
Michael Penix didn't.
He did.
Michael Penix.
Oh, he did. I'm sorry. Michael Penix, that's another.
But that was
not early in the season, but he started.
So, I mean, there were like, it was a much better class. Six different rookie quarterbacks found their way into.
But Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams and Drake May, these were all just way much better quarterbacks than what we saw. I think The Will Howard one, it could be interesting by the end of the season. I just don't think week one he's starting because I don't believe the Steelers are going to whiff on Rodgers and Cousins. And then honestly, knowing Mike Tomlin, I think they would start Mason Rudolph week one. I think Will Howard would have to wait like 3 or 4 weeks.
Given how Mike Tomlin goes about things, probably.
There's not a single other rookie who's going to start day one besides...
Barring an injury, no.
Besides Moore. Sanders. Sanders is the old, Sanders is the only
other one.
Dude, he's having to beat out Kenny Pickett and Joe Flacco. I'm not saying he's definitively, I'm just saying that's the only other avenue other than Kirk Cousins retires and Aaron Rodgers retires.
He's going to go from being too much baggage, not a first round talent, fifth round pick, to they're going to start on week one.
I think Joe Flacco will start.
Has a quarterback ever started week one?
I mean, sure. I'm sure.
Did you hear that stat that fifth round quarterbacks are like 0-43 all time, or like since like 1994? So I don't remember the stat. It's not all time, but like in the last like 30 years, fifth round quarterbacks are horrible at football.
There's two that we're not really, not that we're not considering them.
Mel Kiper. None of the quarterbacks picked in the fifth round have become regular starters over the last 30 years.
I do wonder.
They're like 0-43 or something. It's crazy.
I think Shador could be that outlier, but
so do I. I just don't know about week one.
I think too that not week one certainly, but down the line, I bet you Jackson Dart eventually starts because you got to think if the Giants aren't good enough to really be, or they're in the playoff.
Yeah, Dable shows that you're good with him, so you can keep your job.
Well, I was gonna exactly. Dable's gonna play him at some point because if Jackson Dart looks good, that might be the only thing that salvages his job. And then I think that. Call me crazy, but Riley Leonard and the Colts, I don't think they like Anthony Richardson at all.
They have Daniel Jones there, too. Not that he's good, but they already have two guys. Like, one of those guys is starting way before.
I know, but I wonder, are they bad enough where
not Daniel
they're
Jones,
like, you know what, we're
that.
Just going to put Riley Leonard out there, and we're just going to see what happens.
Daniel Jones has started 50 games in this league at this point, hasn't he?
I know, but I'm saying the same reason Joe Milton, if we're counting starts, the same reason Joe Milton started a game, I don't think Riley Leonard starts a game.
You think he gets a game?
I think he gets a game.
Yeah.
I think that would take
Daniel to
stink. They're going to stink, and then they're going to be like, you know what? Let's see what Riley Leonard gives us before we go and draft Drew Aller from Penn State in the first round.
It's a numbers game. I think they would have to move on from Richardson or Jones before the end of training camp for Riley Leonard to get action. Otherwise, he's clearly their third
quarterback. Daniel Jones has started 69 games in this.
I think mentally they've already moved on from – they want to move on from Anthony Richardson. I think the Colts want to. They just don't have enough in the room yet, or they don't have enough to do it. Because I think
he's going to end up being the Steelers starter.
As soon as he sat out last year, that was a complete mess. As soon as he pulled
himself
from the game,
he lost everything.
He lost everything.
Yeah,
the fan base.
You just can't. It's like the opposite. You just at quarterback, you cannot be the I'm too tired.
He thought he was doing what was best for the team, and hey, I'm not able to go this play, so somebody else needs to come in. But him taking himself out was such a bad look.
If we're saying starts more than half the season, the only one and you said I'll give you $10,000 for each one you get right, but you have to stop at the number you're comfortable with. Starts more than half the season, I would start and end with Cam Ward. That would be the end of it for me.
Sure,
and I would just be
right
like,
now,
I guess I'll take my $10,000. Like I'd be tempted to say Shuck. I'd be tempted to just like say Dart and feel like he gets in early, but I wouldn't do it.
But that's why we took Ward out of the convo, because of course he was going to start the soonest and he's going to play the most games out of these rookies. It's very obvious. You go 1-1, and when your options are Will Levis or him, Cam Ward's going to win the job. They can claim it. They're going to compete when they go to training camp all they want. Cam Ward will, by middle of August, will be named, if not earlier.
Warren Moon gave him the go-ahead to wear number
one. Cool.
I mean,
that's cool.
I thought that was pretty awesome. If you gave me 10 grand, Cody, if you were to say, based on the rosters right now, because Aaron Rodgers is not on the roster, Kirk Cousins not on the roster, I think Will Howard starts half the season. I'd be willing to say that's the guy that I would take.
Man, I mean, you get great odds on that right now. Take all the Will Howard. You can't even bet Will Howard overs. Those won't exist.
Overs? No. You can bet maybe when he'll make his first start offshore and stuff like that.
I think Will Howard, if Aaron Rodgers and Kirk Cousins are not on the roster, he would play eight games. He'll play eight games this season.
I would agree in that scenario, but again, you would admit those are two big things that would not have to go through.
Yeah, we don't know
for the Pittsburgh Steelers. All right, let's talk about what Ryan Nutt said yesterday for the Chiefs. Of course, director of player personnel, he was going over the draft a little bit, and he was talking about Josh Simmons, the Chiefs' first round draft pick. And in particular, something that's interesting, so much discussion about like, oh, the arm length and, you know, this is the requirement and all that. But I guess they have changed some of the ways they measure arm length at the combine this year.
Yeah, apparently. This is what he had to say about it because, again, I would say the process is good on Simmons. The question is, how good is your process?
So Josh is, I'm going to say Josh is one of the better tackles in this draft class. I would give him, you could make your case for the best, but he's definitely in the top three in this draft class in terms of what he provides. The only difference maybe between him and some of the other guys is, you know, he started 2 years and some of these other guys like the LSU kid, I think started more, and you can say experience and stuff like that. But Josh is physically, he is elite. I mean, he is big. He's strong. His feet jump off the tape. When you put this tape on, his set is as pretty as it looks now in terms of offensive line, pass setting. He got better every year. His first year at Ohio State, he flipped to left side and now from the right side the year prior. And I think it just took him a little time to adjust to just everything, like a new playbook, a new surrounding, a new position, essentially. You know, it's not as easy as people think going from the right side to the left side. There is a big difference, and sometimes it just takes people a little longer, and I think that was the case with Josh. This last year, I mean, you can watch those six games, and it's not unfair to say he was the best tackle up to that point.
And so when you listen to him talk about it, it's like they talked about how many times they went to go see him, how many times they checked out the medicals. I won't play it yet because we just played another clip, but he compares him to Christian Darrisaw. And like, I love the process on Simmons, and it's why I want to be incredibly optimistic about the player. It is just all a matter of like, this is a big question of how good is your process? Not that you didn't put in the legwork.
Oh,
they put
yeah.
an infinite amount of legwork on this guy.
They're obviously confident in the in what they were able to discover throughout the process on the medical end. And they have, I'll say, I think it's a track record of being able to lean on their medical staff for these situations. Every case is different, but we referenced it last Friday. You know, the Trey Smith example, much different condition, but still, they trusted their medical staff on that decision. And then going back with Rick Burkholder when he was in Philly, they had a running back as well that dealt with a patellar tendon injury. So when you have your medical team that you've had connected with Andy Reid for, I don't know, it's probably been 20 years now at this point. You're able to trust that more than if this was a brand new regime and like, oh, I don't know. And they're willing to take a first round risk. That should also give you more confidence. But it's of course going to come down to, is that knee going to fully recover or not?
This is the exact comparison he made for Joshua Simmons.
He kind of reminds me of Christian Darrisaw, who's done really well for the Vikings. He's got a little bit of Slater in him who plays for the Chargers. You know, the kid's arms are longer than I think people think. The combine measured him at 33, but his pro day was 34 and an eighth. And I think that's closer to what we kind of had. I think we had around 34 when we brought him in. So, you know, the kid is super talented and super willing to work, and we're excited to have him where we got him.
Darrisaw and Slater are good comparisons. Do they like, I think back to a time when I was like in a clubhouse and the now VP of communication for the Royals, Sam Ellinger, who was working for the Star at the time, came up. He said, do you realize how stupid our jobs are sometimes? And like,
sure.
Do you think he thinks it sounds stupid when he's like, they said his arms are just talking about, they said his arms are 33 and we think they're 34 in the combat. Like, it's just a stupid sentence talking about like the different way. And I don't even know how you measure an arm differently. I'll be honest. I don't know how you measure them differently. What's your wingspan, Gold? Should we get our wingspans on this show?
We once did this during our station combine a couple years ago.
They measured our wingspan?
Did they?
I don't think so. Maybe Specs gets some measuring tape. Let's get some wingspans on this show.
Yeah, but
find out who can block the best.
I think clearly it matters to teams. Clearly. They draft a certain way because of it. But it is funny. Who decided at the combine to measure arm length differently than how the Chiefs or Ohio State are measuring?
They're starting a different part of the armpit?
Right. Yeah.
I'm dead serious, Drew. Do you have any idea? Like, I have no idea. Who decides to change it,
I guess,
is part of it.
It doesn't make
like,
any sense.
Who decides, like, guys, I got to
I think
be
it was Binkley. Binkley decided to change. I think Bink actually did.
I think we've been measuring arms wrong this whole time, and it's time to start from scratch. This sounds like the kind of thing that's like people needed something to have a meeting about. They're like, we haven't changed anything in a while. Let's change it up a little bit. I'm thinking instead of starting with, like, that second bone on the scapula, we're moving to the third bone, and that's it. Those are the new arm length measurements for teams.
After Bink talked about arm length for multiple years on this show and on this station, I think Bink actually is behind the change. He wasn't happy with how Ohio State was measuring arm length, and he said it's changing at the combine.
It's time to get an honest
assessment. Are we saying that Bink needs to change his thought process around the arm length then?
I'm just saying whatever their combine measurement is, the Chiefs are saying his arms are long enough. And they took a short arm defensive lineman. Gelati apparently was a short arm defensive lineman. Maybe his arms aren't short. The Chiefs got different measurements.
I mean, that makes me wonder.
We've been looking at it all wrong.
I mean, everybody's saying Will Campbell's arms were short too for the Patriots. I mean, maybe with the change, that's why they're shorter, because teams are like, yeah, he actually has longer arms. It's just weird to change the way that you do that process.
All right. Up next, though, is there a change in the way teams are viewing a certain position in the NFL, and are the Chiefs trying to zig where everybody else is zagging? We'll kind of get into that next, plus the trash of the day right here on Cody and Gold.